In Mahamudra, meditation means acquainting the mind with its own nature, which means to simply be resting in that non-conceptual state. And perhaps this morning you got a taste through that approach of just kind of doing less and less and less with breath meditation, so that you were just finally left with this non-conceptual state. So recall that the general point of the mind, the advice that we keep in mind before we get to the specifics about what to do with the mind, is do not prolong the past and do not anticipate the future, but just rest in the present moment of non-conceptualization. And so if we're doing that, what are we actually experiencing? If we're resting without thinking. So if you know, there is perhaps a fear or a conceptual concern that the mind depends upon thinking and mental activity. And so I think it's really helpful and beneficial that we have these experiences of resting the mind in non-conceptual states and just proving to ourselves that not only is there something left over when the mind is not thinking, but that this actually is the natural state of the mind that we are simply trying to rest in. And so all of these techniques of Mahamudra Shamatha are leading us to that point of just resting without conceptualization. And so we start off with these techniques. So the breath meditation was one technique or a cluster of techniques, a progression of techniques that we did this morning. And eventually, we just arrive, we eliminate the focal supports altogether, and we are just resting without any focal support in this natural state of the mind. And this is the practice that Lama Allen calls taking the express train to shamatha, passing all of the local stops and going the fast way to getting to shamatha, because it is awareness of awareness. So it is shamatha without a sign, and it is really what we are doing is taking a facsimile of the goal of what we are trying to achieve and taking that as the path. So we're taking the fruition as the path in the way that Vajrayana does, because this is Vajrayana technique. And so we're going to begin to do that in this session, basically just dispense with the focal supports altogether. See, we're moving pretty quickly. But one of the reasons that we're moving so quickly is that we don't have much time. and we feel this sense of urgency, but 4 days or 3 days is really, will give you a sense of urgency if we're trying to cover because what we're really trying to do is to, what I'm really hoping to do is just to give you an approach to shamatha very quickly, and it's certainly not all there is to be said about shamatha by any means, and there's all kinds of more techniques to do that. What we would like to get to is an experience of stillness by tomorrow. so it's certainly, I would guess that, a lot of you, simply in that breath meditation, and especially when you go back and forth, and you do the short frequent sessions of just resting in the non-conceptual state for a while, it's not that difficult to do. And then you just expand, basically you become more familiar with that. And, you know, you just spend more and more time in that non-conceptual state. But you can go back and forth between the non-conceptual state and then working with the focal support of the rhythm of the breath, knowing that you're breathing in, knowing that you're breathing out, and then just keep expanding that. So that's not difficult to do. And I think that you can quite quickly then, if you haven't before, get an experience of what that true stillness is like for, you know, a period of time. And then the reason that we want to be able to do that by tomorrow is that by tomorrow at this time, it would be nice if we had an experience of the stillness of the mind so that we can actually then move into Vipassana practice. And then the Vipassana practice that we're going to be doing is looking at the nature of the mind in stillness. So first of all, if we're going to be looking at the mind, the nature of the mind, it would be nice if we have a referent for stillness, an experiential referent tomorrow when we actually begin to look at the nature of the mind in stillness, because that can become a very powerful experience. And then it's kind of like going back and forth between the non-conceptual state that we ended up in this morning with at the culmination of the breath meditation and bouncing back and forth to a degree of breath meditation, how much ever pranayama or structure that you needed to use to that. You can go back and forth between shamatha and vipassana also, and you find that your vipassana practice is really going to support your shamatha practice. And so it's not like we need to go through the 9 levels of shamatha practice and actually achieve the effortless single-pointed focus of samadhi for 4 hours before we decide that we're ready to take on vipassana. So we will do these as parallel tracks, really. But it will be helpful when we get to the parallel track of vipassana if there is a referent that you know what the stillness of the mind is, so that we can actually examine the nature of the mind in stillness. And then, of course, you will have lots of time to work on this in your own if these are compelling practices for you to take home and then just to work on them and make these incremental improvements. So how do we approach this resting in? We're going to shift actually back to more of the Dzogchen approach now of resting in the stillness of mind in a more direct way that Lama Allen teaches it, rather than this indirect way that I taught this morning. So we'll start off with these essential instructions of the Mahasiddha Maitripa. He says, first, there are 3 types of quiescence. So, and quiescence is another one of those English terms that was used in the past as a translation for shamatha. So now, just shamatha. So calm abiding, quiescence, those were very common ones. So first, there are 3 types of shamatha. Shamatha that depends on signs, so that is the conceptual object. You're actually so external or internal, but you actually have an object that you are using as your focal support for developing shamatha. That's the first one. And breath meditation would be focused on, it would be a sign that you're focused on. The second one is shamatha focused on conceptualization. So we will be exploring that tomorrow, and that is where you're just working with the movements of the mind, with thoughts, And you're actually using thoughts to, as your object or as your focal support in developing shamatha. And we'll explore that tomorrow. But the third one is the ultimate shamatha of maintaining the attention upon non-conceptualization. So this is the one that we're going to just delve into a bit this afternoon. And his description of this is, let the mind like a cloudless sky be clear, empty, and evenly devoid of grasping, and settle it in utter vacuity. By so doing, you will experience the shamatha of joy, clarity, and non-conceptuality. So these are the three primary characteristics that are always mentioned when you're actually resting in shamatha, which is non-conceptuality, luminosity, and bliss. So what we're trying to do in this practice of stillness is, and really the definition of stillness, is that there is no conceptual movement. And so tomorrow we will, or on Monday, we will get into looking at the mind in movement. So first of all, the shamatha or the vipassana progression is that you first of all, the shamatha progression is you develop stillness, and then you can use conceptualization as a way of developing stillness. But then we get into vipassana practice, and we first look at the mind in stillness, and then we look at the mind in movement. And then one that we're not going to have a chance to do in this retreat is looking at the nature of the mind in appearances. But those two are very, very powerful, the nature of the mind in stillness and the nature of the mind in movement. And so what we are trying to do is to rest in this experience of stillness where there is no movement to a conceptualized past or future. So we're resting in the now, freshly, uncontrived, unelaborated, and the experience of that is one of just stillness. And the metaphor that is used over and over again is just that glassy, smooth expanse of water. You know, just imagine the ocean that is just so calm that there's not a ripple on it, you know, a vast body of water, and how it becomes a perfect reflector then when it is absolutely still. So the way that we are going to rest in this stillness then, we are, as at the very end of the day, we'll get into or hear some of three different types of resting and three different degrees of resting. And it is a long while or a lot of progress before there are actually not going to be any thoughts arising at all. You know, before you reach the point where there is just absolute stillness. So don't be discouraged by the fact that you're resting in stillness. And even though that your attention is not drawn off into the past or the future, and you're resting here still in the present moment, there could be a lot of movement during the stillness of the present moment. You're still resting in the stillness of the present moment, but that doesn't necessarily mean for quite a while that there's no mental activity or no thought bubbling up. But the way that we deal with these thoughts, though, the important thing is our relationship to the thoughts that arise while we are resting in the present moment. And so what we our attitude about them is that we note them, but we don't take any interest in them. And a little later, I think at some point, go into more detail about that, what it is in Mahamudra Shamatha that you're actually dealing with these appearances that are arising and how you relate to them. But the importance of this, not engaging with them. So you by not engaging with them, first of all, You don't identify with them. You don't think, this is me, especially these thoughts that have a subjective or an emotional content. So what we, our challenge is going to be, can we actually be present with these thoughts that are arising in the present moment without identifying with them? And if we are able to do that and just note them without identifying with them or becoming fused with them and being drawn off to the future or the past, leaving the present moment, then we come to realize the truth of what His Holiness the Dalai Lama said in one of the Dzogchen texts that he wrote or that was published of his Dzogchen teachings. And he said that the conceptual mind is not self-replicating. That is really a very concise and precise formulation. The conceptual or conceptual, let's just make conceptions. So conceptions are not self-sustaining. So how is it then that they are sustained? It's because we engage with them. So mental consciousness, so these are arising, conceptions are arising in this sixth mental consciousness. And then there is the a confusion that goes on in the mental consciousness that sees these as having a reality that they don't. It sees them as having a substance, a substantial nature, when they are actually just these ephemeral appearances of mind itself. And so that's what we, if we can simply watch appearances like that, even just doing shamatha practice without observing their nature, then what we notice is that they are not self-sustaining. So you just watch an appearance arise and it has no power to replicate itself unless you become party to it. And when we rest in this luminous cognizance without sustaining conceptual appearances when they arise, then we are just resting in what's left over. Because the conceptions come and they go, and there will be periods when there are no conceptions whatsoever, short or brief. And so we rest in that, and basically we discover what's left over when there is no, what is left over when the mind is not thinking. And unlike the threat, basically, of the conceptual mind, basically, that I'm all that there is, you know. Are you sure you want to eliminate me? Are you talking about annihilation? So this is when we rest in stillness, then we can really see the lie of that. And we can never believe that again when we get that threat from the conceptual mind, that if you just eliminate thinking, that there is that is annihilation. So what we do is we just rest in what's left over when thinking stops in the absence of conceptualization. And what is it that is left over? It is the luminous cognizance of the mind. And we just rest in that. Dzogchen Ponlap Rinpoche describes this resting as resting without reference points. So when you're resting in awareness of awareness, your awareness is not directed to anything at all. There's, as Lama Allen puts it, there's no vector to the awareness. It's not directed at, it's not moving with, it's not engaging with anything. It's just resting in the middle of space, basically. And Dzogchen Ponlap Rinpoche refers to that as resting without reference points. So you are just, there is nothing that you are using to define, no reference point to know who you are, what you are, where you are, all of the reference points that we use to define ourselves, gone. And so what does that leave us with? One word that always comes to mind for in the traditions is emptiness. You know, the luminous cognizance that is empty of a self nature, empty of reference points. And Dzogchen Ponlam Rinpoche points out that this can be disconcerting at first, to rest without reference points, without having anything to define ourselves, who we are. And it can feel a little bit threatening that this is committing suicide, in a sense, you know, like a suicide of the sixth consciousness. And so it can feel a little challenging and threatening, disconcerting. And so he points out that Dharma practitioners are not immune to that at all, and that it's very tempting for Dharma practitioners to just replace one set of reference points with another. And so now we have this whole reference, you know, system of reference points, call it Mahamudra or Dzogchen or whatever, you know, but we use this now to define who I am, what experience I'm having, all of that. And this is, of course, spiritual materialism. So the reference points, it's an interesting way of looking at spiritual materialism. You know, what Trungpa Rinpoche really popularized decades ago, that it's basically just clinging to the reference points, because we don't want to release into just the space without knowing who we are, having anything to define ourselves, any coordinates that tell us my GPS position. The great recently passed, or a few years ago now, Yangtang Rinpoche, who Lama Allen said his peers recognized as a Vijayadhara, somebody who was, you know, resting in pristine, able to really stabilize in pristine awareness. And, you know, so this is somebody who had achieved a substantial amount of all the goals that Dzogchen and Mahamudra are trying to lead us to. And Yangtang Rinpoche pointed out that the way that we deal with this in resting, so there are different metaphors for how we actually deal with thoughts that arise when we're trying to, when our preference, or you could say our intention, is to rest without reference points in a non-conceptual stillness. So this is what we are this is our intention, this is our preference. And that we have to know that for this practice, because there are other practices that we'll be doing where we don't have that preference, where the thoughts that come up are not necessarily engaged with them, but we take more of an interest in them. So here, because our intention is to rest in stillness and we prefer non-conceptuality, so there are metaphors for that. So one is that you are like a fencer dueling with an archer. You know, that would require a tremendous amount of skill, wouldn't it? You know, the Olympic sport. You know, and so you could think about how you would actually, if this were your sport, talk about an extreme sport. You know, how would you, and you were figuring out what would be the best way to defend myself. You might think, well, maybe the best way of going about that would be the windmill approach. You know, and it's just constant motion or something like that, where, and you basically are hoping that, you know, you get, if your windmill is moving fast enough, maybe, you know, the air, it'll catch part of the arrow anyway, the front or the back, as it's coming in. But the, you know, the classic approach is that you are just sitting there with your rapier and you're just, the arrow comes, you watch the whole process, and when it gets to the spot right where it needs to be, you give it a flick. And so the arrow never lands. So that you can think of this as like your thoughts. And think about the tremendous amount of vividness of the quality of your attention that would take to do that. You're not going to be falling asleep to be able to pull that off. You know, you're just heightened awareness if this is what you're trying to do. So that's one approach. But again, you know, it takes just a tremendous amount of vigilance. You're really on guard. And Yangtang Rinpoche, I don't know if this is an example of that or proposed as an alternative to that. You know, really, he said, simply note appearances. Never allow a thought, a mental appearance to arise in the stillness of the now, the now, fresh now. Never allow an appearance to arise without noting that it has arisen. But that's all. Just note it. Note its presence and take no other interest in it. And so if you note it, then it's like the common metaphor is the thief who has come to the door or looking in the window. And basically, if a thief is coming, knocking, or, you know, trying to come in the front door, if you just turn on the porch light, the thief is going to withdraw because the thief knows he's been detected. So all we have to do is note the presence of the thief, and then the appearance will withdraw. And so you notice this when you are really resting in stillness, and appearances, call them thoughts, images, some of them are hard to define, but just mental activity arises. And if you note it, so the key is that you have to note it in the instant that it arises, you know, not after it has arisen. So if you note it in the instant that it arises, oftentimes these appearances don't even fully form. And so you don't know actually what it was going to be. It is like a perturbation, a slight disturbance on the calm surface of the water, but it hasn't turned into an object or anything that is going to really tantalize you and take you away. It's just a slight disturbance. And you notice the slight disturbance, and that's it. Back to calm. So this clearly requires a vividness of resting in the present moment. So here, Trangu Rinpoche really emphasizes that in order to be able to do this, we have to be aware of a moment of thought, because moments of mind are always coming into existence and going out of existence, right? And so how long do these moments of mind last? Well, you know, there are, in cognitive science, they're very, very brief. You know, in Buddhist psychology, 64 in a finger snap. So they're extremely brief, and cognitive science says something pretty close to that. You know, somewhere, you know, 15 milliseconds, maybe something like that, for an ascertaining moment of cognition. So really, really brief. But these moments of cognition, Trangu Rinpoche emphasizes that you have to, a moment of thought in the first, he'll call it the first instance or the first moment of thought, can only be recognized by the mind of the first moment also. So you can't recognize a moment of arising, mental arising, in the first moment with the mind of the second moment, because the appearance of the first moment has already passed. It no longer is present. And so if it's not present for you to simply have a vivid noting of, how is it that you would be aware of it then? The only way that it gets the moment of thought of the first moment can become known to the second moment of awareness would be as a conceptualization. Interesting, isn't it? So if you're trying to catch, you know, what occurred in the previous moment of mind, you're stuck dealing with it conceptually, rather than in the present moment, right now, moment of mind one to appearance of mind one, or moment one, and etc. And then you just keep the moments of mind keep resetting themselves, and you can, I think, it makes total sense then at that point, doesn't it? That if you are simply resting in the fresh moment of now is not really disturbed by mental appearances that arise within that moment. All you have to do is just note them and not grasp onto it so that you drag it into the next moment, etc., and try to analyze it and come to terms with it, wonder why this moment of thought arose, etc. Explain it to yourself and conceptualize it. Who cares? Especially because this is shamatha. All you're doing is watching. You're observing what's there. That's all we're doing with shamatha practice. And so when we are resting in this still, spacious awareness with no reference points, just think. This is something that really made sense with the first time that I heard this. That in 2002, there was a conference, a mind-life conference in Dharamsala, where hosted by His Holiness the Dalai Lama, on destructive emotions. And there were, you know, Alan Wallace, Richard Davidson, Daniel Goleman, and another, Paul Ekman, etc., were there. But there was also a woman there from Taiwan. And she was really the only Asian psychologist there at this conference, certainly the only one that I noticed in the rendering of that conference in the book, in Daniel Goleman's book. And she made a point that really seems true to me. She said that in the East, you know, in the Orient, that generally society and individuals value peace. And that when there is turbulence, disturbance, the goal is to kind of return to the set point of stability, peace, serenity. And, you know, you think of tea ceremonies and all of that, you know, and it seems to me, it kind of makes sense. And then she said, however, in the West, what it seems is that everybody is constantly trying, what is valued more than peace is stimulation, excitement, and that everybody wants to be alive, you know, brilliantly, you know, have an impact on everybody around you. You know, just, you know, and that if we find ourselves in moments where there's no stimulation, that we seek out stimulation too, because that is our preferred state, is one that is kind of more turbulent. But basically it's excitement versus stillness. You know, the two poles that she was pointing out. So whether that's true or not, it makes good sense to me. So here then, while we are resting, especially because of our habits of always craving excitement and stimulation and something to do, reference points, you know, and thinking about all the possibilities, you know, entertaining ourselves with thought, when we get to this point then of stillness with no reference points, either of two things can happen. First of all, your mind, if you're resting in stillness, can go just craving movement and will create something just to be in movement. Or the mind can then, or the other possibility, so that would be excitation. And the other possibility is that you, because you're resting in stillness with nothing going on, the mind just thinks that it's time to fall asleep and that your mind becomes lax then. So because we have this habitual association of deep relaxation and drowsiness, you know, in our lives, because, you know, this is when we become, you know, when finally we relax, but, you know, the ultimate relaxation with nothing going on. So these can be really, really challenging when you're trying to rest in stillness with nothing going on. Laxity and excitation can be especially challenging at this time. And so how do we deal with that? Well, so what, first of all, you can say intention, mindfulness, recalling the intention, and then introspection, letting you know how you're doing. And here, introspection is looking right at the stillness of awareness. And so there's, you should be able to see whether it's becoming excited or lax, because that this is the only thing there is that is filling your awareness. So you should be able to see very quickly whether excitation or laxity is occurring. And then if it is, you catch it quickly, you can apply a very subtle antidote. So there are, you know, the remedies for excitation and laxity all depend on catching them quickly. And when you do catch them quickly before they're fully formed, then your antidote can be not so disruptive. So the most disruptive would be if you have to really change your object of meditation to bring in clarity, for instance. Or this would be, for instance, I mentioned that there's one time that I really applaud people for changing their position when they're in the middle of a session of shamatha. And that's if you're sitting down or lying down and you're just can't pull it off. You're falling asleep. And then the thing to do is to stand up. And I say it's okay to stand up in the middle of a session to change your position, because that what that points out to me is that you have recognized the problem and you have just done something about it. You've done exactly what you needed to do. You applied a powerful antidote to what was getting out of hand. So especially with laxity, it's so inviting to just put up with it and just kind of space out. Because there's something kind of seductive about that. You're just sinking deeper and deeper and deeper. So you want to be able to note it quickly in the instant when you're feeling laxity so that the antidote can be very, very slight. So one thing that a very slight antidote that is really effective is just to focus on the inhalation. And there is a very subtle, there's a subtle but measurable physiologically and certainly noticeable to a meditator, there's a speeding up of the heart rate on the inhalation. And there is a relaxation response on the exhalation. And this is called vagal toning. And so there's just this natural physiological response to inhalation and exhalation of arousal and relaxation. So if you just really focus on the inhalation and you catch the laxity in the very first instant, that can simply supply enough. to keep you there in the sweet spot. Another thing that you can do is just to check your posture. Very easy to do, because usually if you're really beginning to sink, then what's happening is that your posture has become very too relaxed. Your spine is no longer erect. So this is one of the point of the 7 points of Vairochana posture, is that your spine is erect because it really is supplying free movement of prana then. And it feels invigorating. So usually shoulders will slump, you know, your back will kind of blow out. And then all you have to do is just sit up straight. And oftentimes you will just feel this surge of energy when you do that. And on and on. So there are a number of things that you can do. But what I really want to talk about here at this point is are two antidotes that are come up in the text right at this point. So we've explored, said there were three clusters of techniques for shamatha in this Mahamudra presentation. So the first is settling the mind that has not settled. And then there is stabilizing the mind that has settled. And then there is enhancing or making progress of this with the stability, the third one. And so in the second one, it's about, as I mentioned earlier, the second one is all about how to develop mindfulness and introspection. And there are really only two techniques in this whole section of the text that are introduced. And these are antidotes to laxity and excitation. And so we can use these with this practice while we're trying to rest in, without reference points, in non-conceptual stillness. And our mind becomes, first of all, let's deal with laxity. Because that one, well, both of them are very common in my experience. So there is the antidote that the Ninth Karmapa recommends is called the Mahabrahma Samadhi of Stability. And this is a visualization. And so basically anything that kind of promotes spaciousness of the mind is going to be an antidote to an effective antidote to laxity when you're resting in this space without any reference points. And you would kind of expand because your mind is sinking into itself. And so this visualization, you take a slow, deep, full breath, and then you hold the breath. And you visualize at your heart a four-petaled white lotus that is upright at your heart. And in the lotus is a pea-sized, it should be very small, not larger than a pea, sphere of brilliant white light. And so this is familiar, right? It should be dazzling, this white light. And so then as you're holding your breath, the pea of brilliant white light ascends through your central channel. So this morning, we did basically a descent of the white light of Padmasambhava, basically, down to our own white light. So now this one time, it ascends through the central channel and comes out through the Brahmanic aperture up here at the crown of the head, and then just continues on into space. So, and you're following this, and then you can just, you know, just visualize that it goes high, high, high into space. And then you can just, that could very well do it right there. You know, that could supply all the balanced energy that you need to just continue to, you know, to dispel the laxity. And Trungpa Rinpoche says that if that doesn't do it right away, then you can just maintain your awareness of that brilliant, luminous sphere of light high up in space for a while. Let your awareness be up there in space. And if that doesn't do it, you can just do the whole thing over again, you know, and start over with retaining your breath and then letting it arise out of the white lotus. So that is the Maha Brahma Samadhi of stability as an antidote to laxity. And then, of course, the other problem is excitation. And really what we are trying to do there is to reduce the intensity of our awareness, because basically we have too much energy in our system that, and actually Trungpa Rinpoche describes it as too much luminosity, and that it just produces an intensity of compelling thoughts that we can't resist. And so our mind just goes wandering with these really intensely compelling thoughts. And technically, there's a distinction between excitation and distraction, in that excitation are pleasant thoughts that usually there's desire and attachment involved with. And so those are said to be the most common. But there is also then the other pole, really, of that is regret. So intense regret. And God, sometimes in retreat, you know, longer retreat after a month or 2 months, where it just, you can just spend days with thinking of every hurtful thing that you've ever said to anyone, or, you know, on and on. And it just is, and they're really, really powerful distractions. You know, they take you away in this exactly the same way that desire and excitation does. You know, but it's just the opposite pole of that too much energy. And so what we need to do now is deploy the opposite visualization. And so now this is called the subterranean samadhi. And so now we visualize a black four-petal lotus at the heart that's upside down. And there's a black sphere of light in the size of a pea, clinging underside of that. You hold your breath, and the sphere of light then descends down through your central channel and then out the secret opening, which is the penis or vagina, down into the ground. So you don't go out the lower opening of the anus, but the other secret opening. And that it goes, and you feel like this sphere of light just has a gravitational weight to it that is just pulling it down into the ground. And it just, you just visualize it kind of dissolving its way right through the granite bedrock here and, you know, lodging deep, deep underground. And again, you can do the same thing. You know, you can either rest your mind with that deep down there or do it over and over again. But it could be that just that once is all that it takes as well. You know, so two different techniques that we can employ or just practice with and experiment with that are different than the other antidotes that you probably know already for laxity and excitation. And then there's a long section in your handout that is an extract from Ocean of Definitive Meaning, the long manual, that describes three levels of resting. And I think these are really, really especially germane for this practice that we're trying to do. So the first level of resting is like water falling from a mountain cliff. And the ninth Karmapa describes this, saying, at first, the mind will seem not to rest firmly upon the object. This is just the beginning of resting. Then, when your awareness has become somewhat more lucid, if it seems that thoughts have increased, they have not. Thoughts have always been arising, but since you were not meditating before, you did not notice them. Now, because your mind is resting evenly and your awareness is more lucid, you notice them. By leaving thoughts alone, without trying to dam them up or chase them down, you will be able to recognize each one without being carried away by the undercurrent of thoughts. So this is that term, undercurrent or current of thought, really seems powerful to me. So when you're doing the vase breathing and you recognize the stillness and spaciousness of awareness when there is no breath moving, what it seems to me is that it feels exactly like that. There is no current of mind moving. And it doesn't mean that, you know, there might not be something bubbling up from bottom, but there's just no current kind of taking you along with it, taking the mind along. So these undercurrents of thought, you notice them. So you begin to notice appearances as they arise. By leaving thoughts alone, without trying to dam them up or chase them down, you'll be able to recognize each one. So it's not a torrent any longer. You know, sometimes it feels like when you're standing under the mountain, the waterfall, that it's just a torrent there, and there's no way that you can identify individual thoughts even. It's just a shower. So now at this point, if you just leave them alone, this is still the first point of resting, you can recognize each one and without being carried away by the undercurrent of thoughts. When you do not need to keep your session short, when your awareness seems to be sparkling clear, and when the flow of your meditation is uninterrupted, then you have reached the first level of resting called like water falling from a mountain cliff. If you feel as if you are being swept away in the midst of swirling water, falling from a steep mountain, that is not it. If it seems that you are watching this falling water without attaching any importance to it, that is it. So you get the point that there can be a lot of appearances arising moment to moment to moment, but that isn't necessarily the problem. That isn't the problem if you aren't being swept away by the current. So if you're able to just watch them come and go, recognize each one. So that is a great achievement. And so this might be your first experience when we try to rest in this still, spacious awareness of awareness. It could be like water falling off a mountain cliff. But so just don't engage those thoughts. Note them without identifying with them, without fusing with them. And then when you're able to do that, you rest in the second way, which is like a slowly flowing river. By looking at thoughts in the way described above, their number will decrease and they will become a non-conceptual state. So this is a real change. Sometimes a thought will pop up suddenly, but since it does not continue, it disappears like snowflakes falling on a hot rock. When you notice the details and quantity of thoughts as they manifest, and the flow of your meditation is continuous, you have reached the middle level of resting called like a slowly flowing river. If you feel as if you are sitting far away from the river and cannot see it flowing very well, that is not it. If you feel as if you are sitting on its bank watching it, that is it. So experiential, isn't it? And then finally, so we've reached the point here already where the number of thoughts now really decreases and they will become a non-conceptual state. And then with practice in that, we begin to rest in the third state, like an unmoving ocean. By maintaining your meditation as described above, the flow of both subtle and coarse thoughts will cease, and you will rest still with non-conceptuality. So this is what we would ideally like to be able to do in awareness of awareness, to be able to just rest with what's left over when there is no coarse or subtle thought. Your body may feel comfortable, or you may not notice its existence. The movement of your breath may cease, or you may not notice it at all. All your experiences of bliss, clarity, or non-conceptuality will expand. During post-meditation, if you do not examine things carefully, you will not be able to discern the details of objects. And even though your mind is not involved in distractions, it may seem that you have become more forgetful. Even when you are not meditating, your meditation expands. When lucidity manifests as an experience of vivid clarity, without any highs or lows, like the center of a clear, cloudless sky, you have reached the final level of resting called like an unmoving ocean. If it feels like an ocean at night, that is not it. If it feels like an ocean during the day, that is it. Since this is the actual practice of meditative concentration, if you continue to practice, the supercognitions and so forth will arise, and this will be, and this will act as the basis of seeing the truth. So those are the stages that our practice of trying to rest in non-conceptuality may go through. Hopefully, they will go through all three phases of that. So let's take a 6-minute break, and we will come back and do a meditation then that takes us directly to this resting in non-conceptual stillness.